Hello, listeners, and welcome to CMI's Peace Talks. I'm your host, Antti Ämmälä, CMI's Communications Manager. In this show, we look at the world through the lenses of peacemaking. We have conversations with both our own and other top experts on what it takes to build lasting peace in this unstable world situation. In the wise words of our founder, Nobel Peace Laureate Martti Ahtisaari, we believe that all conflicts can be resolved. This podcast is about how to do it.
CMI's founder, President Martti Ahtisaari, can be considered the most successful peace mediator of all times. For almost nearly four decades, he worked hard to prevent and resolve conflicts throughout the world, seeing always opportunities where others saw problems. At the age of 83, Ahtisaari is having his well-deserved retirement days, but his vision lives on. As CMI turns 20 this year, this is a good occasion to reflect on the legacy of the man who founded the organization. In which ways President Ahtisaari's principles are still relevant in the new decade as the field of peace mediation seeks new ways to build lasting peace in challenging circumstances? My guests today are Kai Sauer, Undersecretary of State at the Ministry for Foreign Affairs of Finland, and also CMI board member, and Roxana Cristescu, who is the head of CMI's program in Eurasia and the director of EU relations. It's a pleasure to have you both here. So Kai, you worked closely with President Ahtisaari for many years, and you know him well. For instance, you were his right-hand man in 2005 and 2007, when Ahtisaari led the talks on the status of Kosovo. How was it to work with him?
Thank you, Antti. Yeah, it felt not like work at all to work for President Ahtisaari. We were together in this interesting peacekeeping operation in downtown Vienna, in an old banking building. Very, very comfortable. Didn't resemble peacekeeping at all. But we were under the authority of the Department of Peacekeeping Operations of the United Nations. And this lasted from 2005 to 2007. And it was a very intense period, but very rewarding. And Martti Ahtisaari was a good boss. He was, of course, bringing to the table his authority of a president and his authority as a high-level international civil servant, having served as the Undersecretary General of Management at the UN headquarters. He had led serious peace negotiations within the UN framework, but then also quite recently before this Vienna gig, he had landed the Aceh peace agreement. So he was very well regarded, like a demigod almost for the UN staff. He then started to lead under this new operation, UNOSEC. You know, the UN is a very old-fashioned hierarchical organization. And it's a multicultural organization as well, and people are kind of generally speaking, they are very, very respectful to authorities. So they don't speak up, and they address you as sir, and etc. etc. Very un-Nordic or un-Finnish. So Ahtisaari, he had a completely different approach. He had this high authority, but then he didn't kind of abuse it. He was very inclusive, very, very open, very transparent, and encouraging to the staff. And of course, they appreciate it. So the office climate was excellent. And you can only learn from that, of course. I'm not claiming that I've been a very good student, but at least it has left a mark. I'll try to imitate some of these features I learned from him. I think he had also a talent for talents in a way, and I'm not talking about myself, but he had a good eye in picking his collaborators who he then he picks their brains and picks different elements from different people, puts them together, and this is usually the kind of fundament of the end result, or the ingredients at least of the objective he's aiming for.
So you need to have a
and
strong
team. That is actually, since you asked what I would imitate, is definitely that you have to trust people and give them a chance to present their work and ideas. Because the higher you are up in the pyramid, the less time you have to think yourself, and you rely on the people who are working with you and who are working for you.
Yes. So Roxana, do you have personal experiences with President Ahtisaari? Something you would like to share maybe?
Thank you, Antti, and thanks for having me. Well, you know, in 11 years, I think the experiences are so many, right? And I was trying to think of what are the most, the ones, you know, the ones that really stick and the ones that you cannot ever forget. And there's a couple of them. I mean, one thing that I will always remember, and this obviously didn't happen only once, is President Ahtisaari's sort of warmth, right? He had this like incredible way of welcoming people, and he still has. And I remember, I mean, me being based in Brussels, right? We would come to Helsinki, and I remember having this suite in the office. And I think he was bringing them either on Thursdays or Fridays. I can't remember exactly the day. It was towards the end of the week. And I remember that for us, it was always a treat. And we were trying to make our trips in such a way so that we could benefit from it. Another thing that, and actually this is something that it was not only for staff, right? Although obviously he did have a preference for the CMI colleagues. But the warmth in general, you know, he had this incredible talent to put people at ease, and it didn't matter in what kind of situation, right? So this sort of like human and people approach. The other thing that perhaps I would mention is, I tell this story a lot of times, and I don't think I will ever get tired of telling it. I remember the ash cloud. So years ago, we were all in Helsinki, and we were all stuck. We had a staff retreat. And I remember that President Ahtisaari had to leave just before the ash cloud, the volcano erupted in Iceland. He just had to leave to New York. And for me, this was... it was an example of, I think this is how I learned about Sisu, right? Because he came back, after 2 weeks. We were still in Helsinki because we couldn't manage to get out, but somehow he managed to do the round of the world through something like Rio, I think. And then, New York, Rio, he got in Portugal, and from Portugal, he came up with a bus from Portugal to Finland, and he did manage to, you know, to get back home. That didn't happen. It was, what was it? 8 years ago, I think, more or less. Just to give you an example of his, extreme resilience, if you want, and, you know, determination to do what he had planned to do. There are many more stories, but I think these two things, if I could pick, the human approach, being always there for people, welcoming, and then this determination and resilience, those would be the two that I would select.
So at CMI, we talk a lot about Martti Ahtisaari's legacy. Those two features, for example, you mentioned, are these part of Ahtisaari's legacy as a mediator?
Oh, absolutely. I think absolutely. I mean, for us, we had this this motto at some point that it's all about people, right? And I do think that it obviously it comes from him. And Ryan mentioned a bit before the fact that he would not have this very sort of you know, approach of looking down to people or sort of imposing his position. And I think this is something that that reflects in all the work that we do, you know, being sort of resilient, if you want, proficient, but always there for people and making sure that that whoever sort of engages with us, with CMI staff, feels welcomed and comfortable and trustworthy and trustful. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
So it's about treating everyone equally and respectfully in that sense.
Absolutely.
Kai, how do you see Ahtisaari's legacy as a mediator?
It's huge, I think. There are very few individuals who have worked for so long and so deep and so successfully with different mediation processes. And who else comes to mind? Maybe Kofi Annan and Lakhdar Brahimi. Hmm. So he is definitely one of the greatest. And I think what distinguishes Ahtisaari from the two others I mentioned is that he has created CMI kind of to perfectionize, if that's a word, or to give methodology to mediation and be kind of develop the concept of mediation further. And I think this is something CMI is doing quite well, or starting to do quite well, because there's a need for this. Kind of develop the science of mediation. So that will be not only all those of achievements or so-called scalps on his belt from different conflicts which he managed to resolve, but he also created something which is of participating in developing the concept of mediation.
How would you dig deeper with this concept of mediation, developing this concept of mediation? What do you mean by it? What does it involve?
Well, it involves different dimensions, and I think now in this time of pandemic, the dimension which comes to mind is technology. How technology helps to maintain the channels open, perhaps between parties, and there might be other technical innovations which are helpful in the context of mediation. It's a new subject, but I believe that CMI has discovered the subject and is ready to take it further. It cannot do it alone. You need to work with your peers. You need to work, of course, with those who understand technology and start working together on this.
Roxana, do you have something to add to this concept of mediation that Kai is talking about?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we should also remember that that President Ahtisaari was behind, and he was the one that that actually kickstarted or helped kickstart the discussion on the concept of mediation at the European Union level. And at CMI, we have worked quite a lot on this in the past 11 years, to a point where right now I think we're one of the few organizations that is actually working exactly on what Kai has mentioned, looking at how do you make mediation, how do you make it more professional, and how do you make sure that you make it a tool that can be complementary to diplomacy. And perhaps what I would say when it comes to again to Marti's legacy on this, I think there are two things. You might remember that he when he was asked, how is it that you have created CMI? You might remember that he kept saying, well, you know, there was clearly a need for somebody to do the odd jobs, right? He has never defined. what odd means, but I think that's the beauty of it, because we have the capacity to basically create that, right? So the oddness, I think for us, it's we translated it into complementarity and cooperation. So the idea, just like Kai mentioned before, is to be able to work with peers, to look at innovative tools, be it technology or be it something else, but to be able to complement official diplomacy and really bring an added value, right? And I think this is something that we're going to, you know, continue doing. And the other thing that perhaps I would mention, which again, I think it links both to the concept of mediation, but also to President Artisari's legacy, is this focus on institutions. I think he was fond of, he still is obviously fond of institutions and in building them up. So I remember, for instance, with the European Union, when we were talking about the developing the concept of mediation, there was a lot of emphasis put on how do you build up a structure that and an institution that would be able to take this forward.
Mm. On the other hand, the world of peacemaking has changed a lot since Ahtisaari's active years. So conflicts have become really complex, and you have different peacemaking processes going on, and rarely anymore there are these powerful big persona mediators. How do you see this change, and how in which ways his principles are still relevant in this sort of new world?
Well, if I start, I think times have changed in the way that the cooperation between the big powers, the permanent members of the Security Council, has become even more difficult than usual. Mm. It was difficult in Ahtisaari's prime time, but now it's even more difficult. And the peace mediators who are in the field working with different conflicts, they, of course, they rely on the political support and the political kind of consensus of the powers who control the Security Council. It's that that simple. I think Ahtisaari, one of his theses is that you cannot really solve a conflict without the support of the United States. Mm. And I would take it even one step further. You cannot solve it without the support of Russia, as we very much experienced ourselves in this UNOSEC case, where Russia didn't consent to Ahtisaari's proposal at the Security Council. So the conflict was left unresolved because there was a lack of political support. Mm. And if you look around now to different conflicts, the most prominent ones being, of course, Syria and Yemen, I think there's very little perspective to get results, because the political views are at odds in the Security Council.
Mm. Roxana, how do you see this changing world of peacemaking?
Well, I would obviously second Kai on everything that he had just said, and indeed I think Marti was always and encouraging us as well in CMI to make sure that we have an understanding of every dynamic, national or international, that we had to deal with when engaging in a conflict. So he did indeed emphasize this. You always need to make sure that you understand and that you involve everybody who needs to be involved, and you talked to everybody that needs to, you know, to be spoken to. And I think the same principle applies even today. I mean, it's changing, but perhaps it's becoming more polarized and more complex and more fragmented. But the principles of bringing people together and sort of creating support around an issue are the same. Perhaps I would say that I think there is one thing that has the same value that it had before, and I think he even mentioned it in his speech when accepting the Nobel Peace Prize, is that, you know, what people have started, people can also end. And that goes back a bit to this issue of parties, if you want, can get to an agreement on their own. And I think this is becoming a bit more of a reality, and then get the support of international for us. And this is something that that we're actually trying to do a lot in our work. So supporting supporting parties to be able to come up with their own solutions, and then make sure that they get an international endorsement. So rather than asking, for instance, multilateral organizations to find out a solution for them, then the sort of focus becomes a bit more on the parties, and then coming up together with the joint solutions that then can be supported.
As you mentioned, I mean, when you look at sort of Ahtisaari's approach, he was many times very firm and rigorous in his attitude towards the conflict parties and pushing them into a certain direction. How do you compare this to the sort of more subtle approach, the parties themselves finding the solutions and owning the process? Is there a, how do you see these two approaches?
Well, I don't know if it's pushing.
Many times I think he really pushed.
It's more basically explaining the reality, I guess, right? And it's basically explaining these are the conditions, and here's what you're going to have. So it's not about pushing, but it's about being extremely transparent that this is the situation, and this you know, this is what you're going to get. And I think this is completely valid. You see, what we see nowadays a lot in the work that we do is when working, especially at the national level, sometimes you get, you know, people get extremely sort of, you know, in their own bubble and tend to be focused on their own thing and sort of miss the big picture. So one of the things that we do is to try to say there's a whole world out there, and that's how it sort of like works, and this is how you should be engaging with it. So I wouldn't call it sort of pushing. I would call it more sort of being honest and transparent, and you know, what you see is what you get, and even if you have to tell the hard truths, you know, somebody has to tell them.
Do you have something to add to this?
Yeah, I fully second what Rox just said, and I've witnessed it with my own eyes and ears in the case of Kosovo. Of course, I think President Ahtisaari, when he accepts to mediate in a case, he has a clear vision of the outcome of his mediation process, and this vision is based on political realities, and he is capable of very clearly communicating these realities to the parties. This happened in the case of Kosovo status negotiations, where for him, it was clear that Kosovo would not return under Serbia's control. And I believe it was also clear in the Aceh process where he didn't see a GAM going independent. Huh? Mm-hmm. And the political factors and dynamics were critical in both cases. He didn't, it wasn't his private opinion or something he made up. It was a result of a long and thorough political analysis that he had made in beforehand. So yes, I think this is very, very important to note. And I have the feeling that perhaps this approach is not prevailing in most of the processes which are ongoing at the moment.
So if we then move to Ahtisaari's legacy on Finland foreign policy in terms of peace mediation, Kai, how would you describe it? What has been Ahtisaari's impact on peace mediation as a part of Finland's foreign policy?
Okay, let's give it some context first. Ahtisaari is probably the most recognized Finnish mediator, but there have been some others as well. Harri Holkeri, our former prime minister, Elisabeth Rehn, who was our minister of defense and also served as a high UN official. All those characters were active in the mid 90s, late 90s, even early 2000s. And then President Ahtisaari was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And having worked with, I had worked with all of these Finns, I was serving as a UN director at the ministry here, Ministry for Foreign Affairs, I aired this idea that why not take mediation as part of Finnish foreign policy and part of our conflict prevention policy, which was on the rise, also because of the international debate on this concept. And I argued that we have the know-how because we had these individuals, and we could start looking into it. And Alex Stubb, who was foreign minister then and happens to be chair of the CMI board at the present. Alex Stubb, as foreign minister in 2008, he liked this idea, and so we have built on that since 12 years now. This is, according to my counting, the eighth Finnish government or coalition which has mediation as part of its foreign policy program, and it's moving up on the priority list. And in these 12 years, we can actually show quite good results. I can tell about them separately if you want, but that is the background mostly. Yes.
So now Finland has announced building this new center for mediation. In which ways Ahtisaari's legacy is visible in that new center? How would you describe the different functions of that center?
Well, the center is, I think, part of the legacy itself. It's part of the process I just described. And of course, the center, with its still quite limited resources, has to work together with different partners, and partners like NGOs and actors like CMI, Finnish partners and international partners. So I think this is an important asset also for a government which cannot do everything alone, but to create partnerships.
The question that comes to one's mind is that, is there something Finnish about Martti Ahtisaari's legacy? How would you reflect on this?
Finnish part of his legacy. Martti is a true Finn, not in the political sense, obviously, but he's somebody who believes in the Finnish society, societal model. But he's also a great believer in the Nordic model. So I think this kind of human approach, casual approach, no nonsense, honest, inclusive approach, is part of his legacy. Yes. Mm.
Roxana, as mentioned here, you work as the director of CMI's EU relations. How do you see Ahtisaari's legacy from the perspective of the European Union?
Well, I mean, I thought you were going to be asking me how do I say it as Finnish, and I was prepared to give that answer.
Please go ahead. You can answer that question as well. Yes, please.
No, but I do think that this you know, the focus on inclusiveness and on building equitable societies and focusing on the Nordic values and Finnish values as such. And what Kai just mentioned, you know, the nonsense, and then the focus on people. I think this is very well reflected also when it comes to you know, mediation and the European Union. And at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, the European Union should be all about partnership and about the common identity and about doing things together. And I think this is exactly what Martti has always believed in. It's intrinsic. It's built into it.
To wrap up and looking at what we've discussed here, we at CMI believe that Ahtisaari's vision is increasingly needed for peace mediation to meet challenges in the new decade and the decades to come. How would you see the value of this vision when you look at the future challenges that the field of peace mediation is faced with?
I give Rox a go with this one.
I was just coming from a discussion about how is this whole crisis going to affect the way that Europeans in Europe has responded. Do you know what? I'm not going to be. I'm going to try to behave like the president would have and say that I'm not going to be a pessimist and I don't want to be one. I do think that there's a lot to learn. I think he, you know, there's not necessarily from mistakes, but there's a lot to sort of looking back and learning from what has happened and then making sure that that in the future this will not be repeated. So I'll say that I think it's all about partnerships and it's about sort of trying to be selfless and do things jointly. I do think that this is absolutely possible. And as because you were talking about the vision, I actually think that to be able to deal with all the challenges that we're going to have, be them sort of conflict related or pandemic related, I do not think that anybody can do this on their own or alone. So therefore, you know, the whole value of partnerships, I think it's, and building alliances, I think it's absolutely fundamental.
Hmm. Kai, how do you see this?
I agree. And I think there's an observation one can make if you look at the mediation scene where you have certain players, well-established players, and CMI is perhaps even at the age of 20, CMI is one of the newcomers. I have seen that during this pandemic, some kind of partnerships have been created. The cooperation has been good, and it should continue after the crisis has gone. And I think we, the governments who are providing funds to these organizations, we have a special role in this a responsibility also to keep the cooperation between the peer actors, maintain it, and bring perhaps certain topics to the table, which could be looked at jointly, and hopefully finding some resolutions as well. So let's put into the past this this notorious envy concept, and start cooperating even more.
Mm. So global cooperation in that sense, something that Ahtisaari has always highlighted. Just to finish with what really is telling to me is that Ahtisaari many times famously emphasized that the world will never get rid of conflicts without equality. So as mentioned here, the model for egalitarian society in order to create stability in the world. How do you see this legacy, his vision for equality in building more stable societies?
Yeah, well, it's a very important one. And he has always been very conscious of his Nordic and Finnish background. And his thinking is also very much shaped by his experience in developing countries and development work. I mean, this is part of his professional background as well. He was actually recruited in the early 60s to do some development work in Pakistan. And then, well, one thing led to the other. And this has been very important in shaping his thinking. And yeah, this is definitely something which is also present in the thinking of different governments, that you can't distinguish between conflict resolution and development. I mean, if you are efficient enough to create a peace agreement, it won't hold unless it's secured by certain guarantees which are related to the development work. Otherwise, it will collapse. So you need to go hand in hand on both tracks. Mm. Yes.
Roxana, would you like to make a last point on this relationship between sustainable development and peace? I mean, the COVID-19 crisis is further sort of aggravating different problems in terms of stability as well.
A lot of our field is sometimes too much focused on what happens at the table, and that's not the case. There's a lot that happens beyond the table and after the table, the negotiation table, and indeed this issue of what happens once you get an agreement and once everybody has nicely shaken hands. There's a whole world out there, and we're trying to focus a lot on implementation in CMI. I mean, for us, this is absolutely crucial. And of course, you cannot talk about implementation of any agreement without sustainability, obviously. So, I would say that. And this is actually something perhaps that it's also very linked to Marti's legacy. Not everything that happens in the peace mediation world is under the spotlight and just at the table. There's a lot happening outside.
Okay, thank you Roxana and Kai for this really interesting discussion. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to CMI's Peace Talks with Antti Ämmälä. If you like our show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. You can also send us feedback and propose topics to discuss via social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or by sending email to comms@cmi.fi.